Morning, Council. Ready to proceed?
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Philip Feinstrauss. I represent the appellant plaintiff below, Deborah Windham, on behalf of her minor son, Brandon Windham. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Your Honors, the central issue on this appeal is a matter of notice. Did appellee Unger provide notice to the NCCFL that Pawtucket had declined coverage? There's also a factual dispute regarding that aspect. Also, if notice was in fact mailed, was it mailed to the right address? Was notice effective? Unger has argued that mailing it to a warehouse address indicated on the insurance application as opposed to the mailing address clearly indicated on the insurance application was reasonable and satisfied his duty of notice. The problem being that the warehouse, that notice, if it was sent at all, was mailed to, is a warehouse where football equipment was stored and was just sporadically staffed by volunteers, as opposed to a mailing address that the volunteers for the league had designated on the application for insurance to receive mail.
Let's stop for a minute about the facts surrounding the notice, and can you articulate for me precisely what the relationship was between Unger and the football league and what duty flowed from that relationship from Unger to them?
Unger was acting as an agent of Pawtucket Insurance and also as a broker, because he sold several lines, not only Pawtucket Insurance. And once Alpaw approached Unger and requested that Unger attempt to find a company to underwrite the risk, the liability policy for the league, he was an agent of Pawtucket, and also as a broker had an independent duty to the league to provide notice, and same as we assert that Alpaw had.
So his duty of notice arose from the relationship of broker to client, with the league being the client.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Though he was acting as an agent for Pawtucket.
He was acting as an agent for Pawtucket, but he was also operating in the capacity of a broker as well. Unger is both because he's clothed in authority to act as an agent on behalf of Pawtucket, but he's also an independent agent and acting as a broker. The request that was made of him to try to secure liability coverage was not specifically made for Pawtucket Insurance. It was for any liability insurance.
Okay. The certificate or binder that issued, what legal significance is that from the period of time that it was delivered to the league until the time that you believe notice was due from Unger to the league?
The significance of the certificate of insurance is that Unger told Alpaw that the certificate of insurance signified the coverage was in force, and Alpaw then met with the officials of the league and passed that information on, presented them with a certificate of insurance, and represented that at that point in time, on September 29th, 1999, the coverage was in force. So the significance of the certificate is that it simply emphasizes the message that Alpol is giving the league.
Emphasizes or confirms?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Emphasizes the message or confirms the message? Does the certificate have any independent legal significance apart from the oral message?
Well, Your Honor, let me say that I, with regard to our argument as to the validity of the binder being in force, we concede that that aspect of our argument is difficult at best because Pawtucket Insurance is no longer in the case. And with regard to any issues on that, we would prefer to rest on what we've said in our brief. But in all candidness, we're relying really on the issues of notice, the lack of notice from both Alpol and Unger to the league and from Unger to Alpol.
Well, I don't understand what you just said. It would seem the notice relates to telling them they don't have coverage. Why is it important to your argument that they had a binder that led them to believe they did have coverage? Whether Pawtucket's around or not, it would seem if somebody handed someone else a piece of paper that led them to believe we've bound coverage for you, it had the words binder, diagonal line, pending, or something like that. And then the whole purpose of this notice is to correct that misunderstanding or to retract the coverage. Why is it irrelevant to your argument?
Well, Your Honor, if I said that, I didn't mean to say that it was irrelevant. What I meant was that whether there is in fact a temporary binder in place, I don't believe is the issue. The issue is that when you look at the combination of the course of dealing of Alpol, the representations made by Unger to Alpol, and then the representations that Alpol made to the league in conjunction with him actually saying coverage is in force, the league officials tendering a check for an initial premium payment, that, yes, the league did have justification to believe that they had coverage. And that's why the notice is important, because there never was any effective notice that they did not have coverage.
Mr. Feinstress, let's go back to the Chief Justice's initial question, which is what, if any, duty did Unger owe to the Football League? So far, your response is that Unger was a broker, that has acted in the capacity of a broker for the Football League. If that's the case, what duties flowed from that relationship, and how, in your view, were those duties violated?
Well, in his capacity as both an agent and a broker, once he undertakes a request to procure insurance, and this, Your Honor, I believe applies to both Unger and Alpol, that once a prospective insured requests coverage and the agent or broker undertakes to do that, then there's a duty that's created and is not discharged until either notice of declination or actually providing the policy is accomplished.
Well, you say there's a duty. What I'm trying to get at is, what is that duty? You seem to imply that once a broker undertakes to seek insurance on behalf of a client, he's under some legal duty to find it. How is he obligated to provide insurance if none of the companies that he represents desire to write the insurance?
Well, it sounds as though you're referring to Alpol in this case.
No, it's not. I'm referring to Unger.
Okay.
Now, I may be off base, and you're free to tell me that I am. I'm not worried about that.
I would refrain from doing that.
Feel free to do so. You wouldn't be the first, and I'm sure you won't be the last. But I'm actually referring to Unger. I'm trying to get a handle on what I think your brief suggests, and that is because he didn't procure insurance for them and because he had a duty to actually find it, his failure to give notice that the Pawtucket insurance was declined, it constitutes a breach of that duty, and therefore he's negligent. And you articulate in your brief a duty for ALPA, but I don't see a duty articulated for Unger, and that's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, Under the facts of this case, I believe that the case that appellant cited, Honeycutt v. Kendall, which we asserted applied to ALPA, I believe also applies to Unger, because in our brief we focused on the fact that ALPA made a direct representation to the league members that coverage was in force, but the source of that representation flowed from Unger. So I believe that, and it's also obviously a dispute of fact, whether Unger told ALPA and therefore should have been found in our favor below, I believe that the duty under Honeycutt applies to both ALPA and Unger.
That duty being what?
That duty being that undertaking to procure coverage puts the agent or the broker in a situation where they have to either provide information of the declination or provide the coverage. And in this particular case...
Well, now you're starting to mix apples and oranges. If you have a duty to provide coverage and you don't provide it, then presumably you violated that duty. But that's not really the claim here, is it? The claim is that that in whatever capacity ALPA and Unger were acting, they didn't give sufficient notice that the ultimate insurance company, Pawtucket, had turned down and declined coverage. How does that relate to the duty that you just articulated?
Well, in Honeycutt, it was an issue of whether coverage...
I'm not concerned about Honeycutt. I just want to know what the duty was in this case as it relates to your claim of insufficient notice. Why was there a duty to give the kind of notice that you claim wasn't given?
Well, because the league, under the facts of this case, had a reasonable expectation of coverage. And especially under the circumstances of Unger allegedly and ALPA undisputedly passing information to the league to the effect that they were covered. That, in conjunction with the presentation of a certificate of insurance, in the absence of there actually being coverage, I think obviously creates a duty, and that's what Honeycutt says.
So in the scenario you described, you would have expected, I think, Ungerer to follow up and say to the league, you know, I gave you this binder, I told you you had insurance, and then I wrote to you and told you you don't have coverage. It was declined. And I haven't heard from you. Aren't you a little concerned that you don't have insurance? What's going to happen next? And because Ungerer never followed up, that would be part of the duty he breached?
Well, we made an argument below in the Superior Court that Unger may have had a heightened duty under the circumstances, knowing that the league was without any insurance at that point, and possibly he should have made a phone call. But that argument really is not sustainable. The real issue with regard to Unger not providing notice in this case is not only do we assert that he had a duty, but he is represented that he sent this letter notifying them of declination, the problem being that there's a basic issue of fact, first as to whether he sent any letter at all. His credibility has been called into question not only by the appellant and the league, but also by his co-defendant, who testified under oath in deposition that he had serious doubts that Unger ever sent the letter. And our point is that even if the letter is sent, it's sent to the wrong address, and therefore it's inadequate notice, and he's breached his duty to provide notice of the declination.
Well, what remedy are you seeking from Unger? Let's assume you're correct up to the point you just articulated, in that, in fact, Pawtucket, because of the action of their agent, would have to cover this incident. Pawtucket's no longer in the case. What do you seek from Unger?
Well,
what remedy?
Our first of all, I don't believe that our claim against Unger is derivative of Pawtucket. We believe that there's negligence on his part that stands alone in failing to provide notice of lack of liability coverage, so that there's been an assignment of the league's, of all the league's rights in this matter, both under the Pawtucket policy as well as any other acts of negligence.
Well, you don't have a claim above the policy limits that are indicated on the binder, correct?
That's correct. I would say that that's correct.
So your claim is that Unger should pay the policy limits if he, in fact, was negligent in failing to carry out his duty to the league?
That would be nice, but I don't think that's the way that it would play out, Your Honor. There's been an imposition.
Well, what are you asking for?
Pardon me?
What are you asking for?
Well, we're asking that Alpaw and Unger be held accountable for the damages that the minor Wyndham sustained.
The personal injury judgment that was uninsured?
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Somebody has to pay that, and it's either Unger or Alpaw or both.
But whatever duty they owed can't exceed the policy limits that were indicated on the binder, can it? Their duty didn't extend beyond to what they promised they would provide.
Your Honor, on second thought, I don't know that the Pawtucket binder, if it did have, for instance, a limit of liability lower than the amount of the Inquisition, would be relevant. Because what we're alleging is that in the absence of the applicability of the Pawtucket insurance, that both Unger and Alpaw had duties which they breached to either provide notice to allow the league to secure alternative coverage or find them alternative coverage. So,
yeah, but the alternative coverage was capped at the amount of their expectation, which was the policy limit indicated on the binder. No one represented they were going to get them an unlimited coverage for a deposit of $600 and a potential annual premium, did they?
No, Your Honor.
Well,
no, but I don't believe that the liability limits on the Pawtucket policy, even if it's found that it is relevant, would have any bearing on the damages that we're claiming in this case, because...
All right, so if I'm a potential insured and I go to an agent and I say, get me a policy with a commercial liability policy with upper limits of in the aggregate of $1 million, I get a binder that says, until such time as you hear further, we'll cover any incident that occurs that calls on your commercial liability coverage, and then they fail to provide the coverage, there's an incident. I'm not bound in any way by what the binder said. I can demand that the agent who failed to get this policy didn't get me a $10 million policy because my actual damages exceeded the coverage that I had on the binder? Is that your position?
No. An insured is bound by the clear language of what a policy says, but our dispute is not based on the interpretation of policy language. It's based on the failure of Alpaw and Unger to provide notice that the league didn't have any insurance at all and
okay.
have the opportunity to secure alternative coverage.
You're down to 2 minutes left in your rebuttal. Did you want to save it?
Yes, Your Honor, I would. Thank
all
you
right,
very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I represent the defendant, Ungerer. And based upon your questions of Mr. Feinstrauss, I would see if maybe I can answer some of the questions before I get into my argument. Mr. Ungerer, in this case, was definitely an agent of Pawtucket. There's no doubt about that. But he never acted as a broker for the Football League. He was contacted by Mr. Alpaw as a friend and basically said, can you get me insurance for this league? He had no dealings with the Football League. Football League paid him nothing, and he said, I think I can get it with Pawtucket. He contacted Pawtucket, understood he could get the insurance, gave Mr. Alpaw an application for the Football League to fill out, sent in that application, and assumed all along that there was going to be coverage.
Unger dealt exclusively with Alpaw throughout the entire period of events?
Pretty much.
Well,
exclusively. He asked Alpaw to get the information. Alpaw got it for him.
Was there any contact of any kind between Unger and the Football League?
I don't recall there being any direct contact with the Football League.
Direct or indirect?
I just don't recall any direct at all. I think indirectly, the league had to give the information to Alpol, which in turn gave it to Mr. Unger. But I don't think he ever contacted anyone from the football league personally. That's why I'm saying he was not acting as a broker for that for the league.
Except that when the time came to give notice, the coverage was declined. There was a letter sent directly to the league.
Directly to the league.
So that was the first direct contact.
I think that was the first direct contact. He got the I'm hesitating a little bit because there was a question about the certificate of insurance. I believe Mr. Alpol asked him about that as well, if he could provide a certificate of insurance. He provided one, and I think he told Alpol, go ahead and copy them for the other places where the school played, where the football league played. But I don't believe he had any direct contact with anyone from the football league. That's correct.
And his indirect contact was he received an application for insurance from the league.
He received an application for insurance. He mailed that application in. He talked to the underwriting in advance and assumed that it was going to be issued. I think the one mistake he made in this case was that he signed the certificate of insurance because he anticipated that there would be no problem. But he was not acting as a broker. He was strictly an agent for Paul Tuckett the entire time. And, of course, he would have been paid by, if the policy had been issued, he would have been paid as part of the commission, but not by the football league.
Is it correct that that certificate of insurance acted as a binder and that Paul Tuckett would have covered any incident that occurred up until the time they notified Mr. Ungerer and presumably, at least arguably, the league that they declined the full policy?
I would concede that's probably the case. Mr. Unger said that he did not consider that he was issuing a binder, but he did sign a certificate of insurance, and I think reasonably someone has to say that that's going to bind Paul Tuckett. And if this accident happened before the letter of declination went out, I think there would be coverage. I don't think there's any question about that. But
so
of course, the letter of declination went out.
The certificate would not only bind Paul Tuckett, but it would also give the football league every reason to believe that it was covered.
I think that's true, Your Honor. I think that's true. I think it by issuing that certificate of insurance, which he probably should not have done, he is indirectly saying there is a binder out there.
What's your understanding of the duty, if any, that Mr. Unger owed to the league?
Well, he undertook to get insurance for the league. There's no doubt about that. He sent in the application. And when the insurance company declined insurance, his duty was to reasonably notify the league that it did not have insurance coverage. And that, is, I think, is the issue in the case. Did he reasonably do that? I think everybody concedes that he should have notified by proper notice that there was a declination of coverage.
And your position is if he failed to do that reasonably, then he did breach a duty. And if he did, what's your view of what the plaintiff's remedy would be?
I don't think the plaintiff has a remedy at this point because there was no insurance ever issued and the policy was properly, or the insurance company did not issue the policy, the binder ended. As I said, there would have been a problem if the accident occurred during the term before the insurance company declined coverage. But once it declined coverage, there is no coverage available.
Well, let's assume for the sake of argument that the position ultimately taken by the court is that there's a factual question about whether notice was legally adequate or not, whether or not sending it to a street address as opposed to a post office address indicated as the mailing address on the application is in fact negligence of some kind. If that were the case, what would be the remedy for the plaintiff?
Your Honor, I can't answer that. I don't know what the plaintiff's remedy would be. We never got to that stage in this case to know what the remedy would be. My position would be he has no remedy because there's no insurance. I guess his position will be that because we did not send proper notice that we're on the risk somehow for the policy.
No, I think that's his brief position.
Yeah, but I don't. We can, for purposes of this argument, I guess we can concede that there would be a duty if my client did not properly notify the football league. And perhaps that has to go to a jury as to what that duty would be and what the damages would be.
Well, getting into the details of the notice, is it correct that the football league gave under two addresses?
The application form has on it two addresses. It says on there property location and mailing address. And both of those were put on the application. There's no question about that. What Mr. Unger said was when he sent out the notice of declination, he just simply looked at the certificate of insurance, which was the first document in his file, and mailed it to the property address because that was the only address on there.
All right. And then so this case will turn on whether a duty was breached by sending the notice to the property location rather than the mailing address.
I believe so.
By what standard do we determine what the duty was, you know, narrowed down to that issue?
The standard is this. I looked through the insurance code, and there is nothing in the code that specifies how a declination should be sent to an insured. Most certainly, if you have an insurance policy and you are canceling it, it has to be by certified mail. There's nothing about binders. This code of regulations, code of Delaware regulations about insurance is also silent with regard to declinations and binders. The insurance code does indicate that for cancellation of policies and non-renewals, you should be sent it to either the last address of record or the last known address.
Let me ask you a hypothetical question. Let's suppose someone has a residence in Delaware and they also have a beach house, but they never get any mail under any circumstances at the beach house, but the beach house is insured. So in my hypothetical, the property address that's insured is the beach address in Rehoboth, but the mailing address is their home in Wilmington. And then the insurance company decides that it's not going to renew the policy or issue a policy or something, and it writes to the beach address but not the mailing address. Would that be effective notice?
I can't answer that because that's not the fact or pattern here.
And no, I know.
That's the real difference, though.
I know, but that's why we call them hypotheticals.
Okay, hypothetically, you might be correct. But the facts here are a little different, and that's what we're dealing with.
No, but go back to my hypothetical. And you know, this is...
You may be correct in that situation. Or if it's a vacant lot, as was suggested by Mr. Feinstrauss, maybe that's true.
And, well, the purpose of my hypothetical is to try to focus on the significance of someone who's dealing with a company and saying, here's where I have insurance, but if you want to reach me by mail, here's my address.
It wasn't all that formal, as I mentioned. It was simply two addresses put on the application. But we're not dealing with just an address here. It was not just a warehouse, as suggested by Mr. Feinstrauss. 742 Stanton, Christiana was the physical location of the football league. It had an office there. It had a warehouse there. It had a telephone there. People manned it, although not on a regular basis, we understand. There was a mailbox in front of the property. They indicated they just never looked in their mailbox. But it's a physical location. It's not like it wasn't a place or that people didn't operate out of that place. I think that's what the court below indicated. We had an actual physical location there. My time is up, Your Honor.
And therefore, I won't pursue my question.
I'll be glad to answer for you.
I know that. Thank you very much.
Your Honors, good morning. May it please the court, I'm Paul Cottrell with Ty Cottrell and Logan for Mr. Alpaul and his agency. And my remarks are very brief. If I have any time left, I'll concede those to Mr. Casarino if you'd like to have more questions for him. This story began in May of 1999 when the letter from Nationwide went to the league and said, we're not going to be in this market anymore. We're not going to have issue general liability policy for the league. And in conversations with Mr. Alpaul, he explained to the league officials that he was an exclusive agent of Nationwide. He could therefore no longer give them or provide them with liability insurance. Sometime in June of 99, again on a conversation on the phone, He gave three referrals to the league officials, KT&D, Zutz, I forget the third one, and told them they would have to seek out and get this liability insurance. Months passed. Apparently nothing was done. Then in September of 99, again, telephone conversations, there was inquiries by the same officials to Mr. Outpaul about a property loss, some flood coverage, and he asked, oh, by the way, did you get that liability insurance? There may be a rider involved. And they said, no, we have no insurance. He understood the urgency then because they were bare at that point, and they didn't know what to do. Outpaul bumps into Mr. Unger in Newark at the bank. They have a common bank, and in casual conversation mentions this. Mr. Unger relates that he thinks he can secure coverage through the Paul Tuckett Company, and then the events that unfold are as Your Honor suggested. Mr. Outpaul was in between as the conduit.
Well, didn't Mr. Outpaul, by virtue of his conduct, undertake to help out his client at the Football League to get liability coverage?
He did help them, but since it was made clear and it's undisputed that he, through his agency, could not secure this insurance, he was merely acting as a messenger for someone else, and every document in the case, whether it's the proposal or the application or anything else you want to look at, makes it clear that the agent involved is Unger.
But you see, the way you've recited the facts, those are all conclusions. And what your opponent is saying is that he's entitled to have a jury decide if Mr. Outpaul was a messenger or if Mr. Outpaul was doing something else. Why isn't that a factual dispute? It could be your characterization is entirely correct and the jury would agree. But why isn't that a fact to be determined by a jury, whether or not Mr. Outpaul was a messenger?
Because those are undisputed facts, that from the get-go, Mr. Outpaul explained to them that his agency could not secure their liability insurance. They had to go through someone else. That's undisputed. And it's also undisputed that that someone else was the Unger agency.
Well, if you were an attorney for Nationwide and you said to someone, I can't be your attorney, I'm the attorney for Nationwide, mm-hmm. and then you proceeded to act on behalf of the person you couldn't be an attorney for, but you're still an attorney dealing with a professional problem they have with other professionals, normally a jury would have to decide whether they were relying on you to do something for them or whether you were strictly a volunteer, you were no longer an attorney, you'd made it clear to somebody you couldn't be an attorney, or did you really sign up to be some intermediary with responsibility?
I would submit that, Your Honor, the facts here are so clear that that could not be the case. Again,
well, couldn't the Football League have at least developed the impression from the conduct of Mr. Outpaul that despite what he had told them before, he was now undertaking to act as a broker to help them secure insurance?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
The undisputed fact, all these people were deposed. From the get-go, Mr. Outpaul said, I'm an exclusive agent of Nationwide. I cannot get this insurance for you anymore. Here's the names of three other agencies you can go to. Months later, he finds out in a casual conversation.
That may be what he said. That may be what he believed. But the question is, what would have been a reasonable impression in the mind of the client, of the Football League?
I'm saying that the facts undisputed in this case make it unreasonable for the league to have thought anything else. And, in fact, that's not even contested.
Let me say that looking at the facts, and it's possible someone could say, well, you know, I would have expected Mr. Outpaul to say, don't talk to me, talk to Ungerer. I'm not going to touch your binder. I'm not going to be delivering your binder. I'm not going to be filling out your application. That's all Ungerer. And notwithstanding what you say was this initial clear conversation, when Mr. Alpaugh is not distancing himself from the relationship, in fact, he's the conduit for everything that happens, why couldn't someone say, well, that's where he wanted to be, but then he must have regrouped because he's the only person the league dealt with. They never dealt with Ungerer.
Well, I would tend to differ with your characterization because they clearly were dealing with Ungerer through this Mr. Alpaugh. He did have a continuing relationship. These are people he'd known for many years. I believe they still had a property policy. That's what initiated the conversation in September of 99 when they called about the flood coverage, and he said, oh, by the way, did you get that liability insurance? And when they said no, he realized that now it had lapsed and they have an issue. So there's some urgency with people that he did have a relationship with.
Right. Well, your responses are helpful. The court doesn't have any preconceived notion of how this appeal or how the case should come out. And what we're trying to do in this appeal is look at the facts and see if the Superior Court correctly decided there are no set of disputed facts. You're out of court, no trial, no hearing, no jury. As a matter of law, you lose. And if it's that clear, then the Superior Court will be affirmed. But what we're hearing is there are two sides to the story, and an objective person looking at these facts might have been confused about who was doing what.
I understand what Your Honor is saying, and my argument to this court is if you look at the facts in the record that are undisputed, there's no way any reasonable person could believe that Mr. Alpaugh was their agent securing this coverage.
Would there have been a difference, do you think, in your interpretation of the facts had Mr. Alpaugh been a general insurance agent, much like Mr. Ungerer, rather than an exclusive agent of Nationwide?
Perhaps, particularly if that had been explained to the league officials. That's why I repeat, the undisputed facts are it was clear and made clear to them and repeated, I'm a Nationwide agent, I'm exclusive to them, I can't deal with this company. Here are some names. Go get the insurance. Months pass. You don't have the insurance. I happen to bump into this fellow at the bank. He says he can get it through Pawtucket. The documents that go back and forth clearly show it is Unger that's securing the coverage, clearly show that it's Pawtucket, which is a company that Mr. Alpaugh and his agency cannot service, et cetera.
I understand your position is your client has no duty owed to the league under these circumstances at all, but I'm hoping you can help me with what I continue to find perplexing, and that is, let's assume there was a duty owed by either Ungerer or Alpaugh.
All right, sir.
And let's assume, for the sake of argument, that that duty was breached because there was a failure to give notice that the binder was no longer in effect and that Pawtucket had declined coverage and that they were running bare. What's the remedy?
Well, I think the remedy here is there's a judgment in place now for $45,000 that presumably would have been covered by this insurance. Of course, we never got to that question. What would the Pawtucket coverage provide? And if looking at that policy, it would have covered this injury, then that's the remedy.
The policy limits is the maximum remedy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the only representation in the certificate of insurance does say this certifies this insurance is in place. Whatever that insurance was, we don't know what it was, the plaintiff would be limited to the confines of that insurance. Yes, sir.
I took it from your opponent's position that he believes that there is a remedy beyond the potential policy limits here, and I was having some difficulty understanding how that could be.
I don't see that, sir.
Okay.
I don't see that, to answer your question. And if there's any time remaining, if you want to have more questions from Mr.
Sadly, there is not.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Your Honors, I'd just like to conclude by pointing out that the decision below finds that there is no material dispute of fact. And as I think has been made quite apparent this morning, there's issues as to whether Ungerer sent a letter at all and possibly a mixed issue of fact and law as to whether sending it to the wrong address was reasonable.
Well, apart from the wrong address issue, you say there's an issue whether he sent the letter at all or not. Now, there is, in fact, a letter, and I assume at deposition he said he sent it. What are the facts that are to the contrary?
The fact to the contrary, which calls into question Unger's credibility of ever having sent the letter, is that Unger testifies under oath in his deposition that he told Alpaw about the declination of insurance from Pawtucket. Alpaw testifies under oath in his deposition that Unger never told him that. Therefore, as a logical necessity, one of those two people was not truthful when they testified under oath.
On that point, what do we do with the fact that Delaware law generally is, if someone posts something in United States mail, God knows why, Delaware law presumes that it was in fact received?
Well, that's the Graham test, which with both appellees argued and the court supported. The problem is the Graham test requires that it's properly addressed, and we don't have that. They did not satisfy the Graham test requirement.
Well, but your characterization of properly addressed goes to the addresses on the application. It's not as if it were sent to a non-existent address, which is what normally the properly addressed means.
The court found that it was reasonable to send it to what we characterize as the wrong address, and we believe that that's a jury question.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.
Please rise.